Did you see the stylish kids in the riot? Shoveled up like mugs at the night on fire, wombles bleed, truncheons and shields. You know I cherish you, my love.
Welcome to the Young IBA podcast. I'm James, this is Pete.
G'day everyone.
It is episode 48 and it is the 23rd of February and I'm happy to be back. Did you guys miss me?
No, it was great. It was great to be to have, you know, a bit of control over the podcast for a short period of time.
Yeah. So, do you have an inflated ego? Do you have a sense of worth about the podcast now?
I do. And investment. I think I'm going to find it difficult to just fade back into the secondary position. It's going to be hard.
There's no secondary position in this podcast, well, Pete. We are both leaders.
Okay, well, that's nice. Yeah, so, no, it is good that you're back, James. Less work, actually, in my job.
Yeah, because you'd had to edit it last week.
I had to edit it, and I had to, you know, you have to get more context and stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
I had to sort of sit back, make some last comments.
Well, I just quickly pad for you and just go, like, the reason that story is important
is
because...
Facts and dates and stuff like that.
Yeah, cool. So we got a huge show for you guys coming up. This interview was awesome. We're going to be talking to Eunhee Park. Nina, am I pronouncing that right? Because it was in my head so much that I was not pronouncing it right in the interview.
I think it's okay.
Okay, cool. Yep. So Eunhee Park... fascinating story. She grew up in North Korea. She managed to escape and she tells us how she did it, what it was like growing up in North Korea and what it's like now living in Australia, now living in South Korea as well, and what it's like just being treated as a human being.
Yeah, all our interviews have been great, but this is our best one.
I think so. And it just makes me really happy that I grew up in a liberal democracy.
Oh, exactly right. So her stories are really harrowing. It's amazing. Yeah. Amazing just sitting here listening, talking, like someone casually talk about what she went through.
Yeah, and it's not a movie. It's like you actually went through this like 5 years ago.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Stuff like, what did she say? She was like held up at a police station standing up for 6 hours because she dyed her hair brown.
Yeah.
Like that's...
I didn't realise that kind of stuff went on in North Korea. I didn't realise they were that red. I mean, I knew, like, obviously, I didn't know stuff like what you wore and stuff like that was such a big issue for
them. Well, weren't there, like, 13 approved haircuts that you can have?
I remember seeing that
infographic.
I did not know that.
But seriously, like, 6 hours at a police station for dyeing your hair wrong would be, like, George Orwell would have written that in 1984 and an editor would have given the note of, like, too cartoonishly evil.
Yeah.
And actually, it actually happened.
Yeah, and you know, the manner of her escape and all that kind of stuff. So it's really good. Tune in.
Cool. So, yeah. And we're also going to be talking to Simon Breeny, obviously one of our co-workers. He was on Q&A this week.
Mm-hmm.
And well, Pete and I, we have one of our favorite segments, the Q&A Clap of the Week. Long-time listeners will know what we're talking about, but this week was a little different. I think we're going to play the audio for you now. Just note a slightly different Q&A clap.
Renewables already are going to receive $60 billion by 2030. Now, just to put that in context, because that's a huge number for people to try and comprehend, that would cost the same amount of money that we're spending on renewables between now and 2030 would build us 10 nuclear reactors. So that would solve both the cost problem and it would reduce emissions.
The keen-eyed listener might have heard that was an actual authentic Q&A clap. It's incredible.
Well, it throws into question our whole segment because we say Q&A claps are for stupid things.
Yeah.
And who knew that a clear-eyed, sort of sensible policy position would receive rapturous applause from, you know, the Ultimo audience?
Yeah, exactly. So, well, Pete and I thought it would be pretty good if we were to take this opportunity to tell the Q&A audience about other pretty sensible policy ideas that the IBA had now that we've got a foot in the door with nuclear energy policy.
Well, it was hard to think of them when they're not stupid. But anyway...
we're much better coming up with a really benign stupid...
Yeah, I had to jump on the website and check out what our positions were. But
yeah, quick look through the 75 ideas to transform Australia.
So James, hit me with your Q&A clap.
Cool. So, well, Q&A audience, if you like that, I also thought... it shouldn't be against the law to offend someone.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, yeah.
Right, very good.
Feels good getting a clap for something smart.
You've made a genuine contribution.
Thank you, man. Thank you.
So my Q&A clap for this week is that less tax and less regulation is good for business and good for employees and good for all Australians.
Thank you.
Well, the Q&A audience seemed to love it, Pete, so hopefully that's the harbinger of things to come.
Mm-hmm.
Cool, let's talk about this story. So, Pete, we'll have you talk us through this one.
Okay, I'll talk us through this one. So, obviously, this week, what are they called? The Australian Human Rights Commission dismissed the claim against Yasmin Abdul-Majeed for racial discrimination, which on the surface is a good thing because you should be able to say whatever you want. and the Australian Human Rights Commission shouldn't exist.
Yeah. So it's on all surfaces, not just on the top surface. I would say on all surfaces, this is a good thing.
It's a good thing. But there has been complaints from some people that the pace at which this case was dismissed didn't mirror that of other people, which is also a good thing, I suppose. And they did say after QUT and after Bill Legg that they would clean up their administration processes. But people like Chris Kenny, Callum Thwaites, who we've interviewed on this program, tweeted that it's funny how Yasmin got off so quickly compared to the ordeals that they and their colleagues went through.
Yeah, exactly. So Yasmin on the 14th of February sort of broke the news on Twitter that she was being investigated for under 18C.
Yep.
Obviously, we don't know what it was exactly that was about. But then 6 days later on the 20th, she said, "Update, the complaint against me, which alleged racial hatred under the Racial Discrimination Act, has been terminated due to lack of substance. Nice to know the system works."
So that's the kind of detail and context that I'm talking about.
See, where would this podcast be without me?
It would be a ramble.
A boiling heap. So I would say that, Yasmin, the system doesn't work because you spent 6 days worried that your words were going to cost you money and time and resources.
Yeah,
so I think this is evidence of the system not working. In fact, get away with that system.
Yeah, that's true. And this is what goes back to one of my beefs about... So we've had a lot of grievance policy politics.
Mm-hmm.
One of the traps that people who oppose grievance politics falls into is to actually do it themselves. So, like, whoever has made this complaint, don't do that.
Yeah.
Don't.
I kind of think the person that did this was like, well, let's just see what happens when the shoe is on the other foot.
Yeah.
Unless, of course, they were actually, I let Yasmin's words disturb me to the point that I filled out a form.
Yeah.
In which case, reassess a lot of things you think.
Because she said I was, what's the word?
Islamophobic?
Descended from convicts.
Oh, yeah. Oh, is that what it was?
Oh, no, I don't know what it was. Yeah, it's a secret knows what it was. But that was...
Was it you?
It wasn't me. No,
I think Pete made the complaint.
Definitely
Nina will want this on the official podcast minutes. I suspect Peter Gregory made a complaint under 18C.
How you going today, Nina?
Good.
So the final story before we get into our interview. So obviously the movie Peter Rabbit has come out. I say obviously I hadn't really heard of it until this sort of ordeal. So Peter Rabbit, story of a bunch of rabbits that move into a farm. The farmer takes umbrage with the presence of the rabbits, and there's a comical war between the two. Now, there's one scene in which the farmer who is allergic to blackberries, so the rabbits start pelting him with blackberries, and he's forced to use an EpiPen. I haven't seen the scene, don't know how funny it is, but it has really riled up some people. They have now started to complain. There's like a hashtag boycott Peter Rabbit because it's making light of the serious issue of food allergies.
Does it make light of it?
I don't think so. So the scene is he freaks out, uses an EpiPen, which is not taking light of it. In fact, it's actually taking it very seriously, which is like, this is what you should do if you have an anaphylactic reaction to something.
Is this in the original Peter Rabbit story?
I don't know. Peter Rabbit was not a big part of my childhood growing up, so...
Nina was tickled by
nor
that.
Nor were EpiPens, to be honest, so I don't quite know what I'm talking about here. But I would just say the kids can hack that kind of stuff. Like, people grew up with, like, Enid Blyton and, you know... Mm. Some Roald Dahl and stuff like that, where, you know, there was some pretty weird stuff. Like, I think Matilda, doesn't a little girl, like, get picked up by a pigtail and, like, thrown across a thing? And it's like, children can hack that.
Not familiar with Matilda, but I'll take your word for it.
Okay, but I think Peter Rabbit, I think people can hack one simple EpiPen joke without both not taking food allergy complaints seriously anymore and also having that ruin their day.
That's right. It's like Beauty and the Beast, right? So Beauty and the Beast is about this guy, well, this monster, taking a woman prisoner.
Yeah.
And then they fall in love.
There's a really... Yeah,
so
there's
it's
a lot
right. It's okay to take women prisoners as long as you fall in love.
There's a lot of revisionist history to be done with Beauty and the Beast.
That's worse than an EpiPen.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, oh, but by the way, he's actually really handsome. Once you get rid of the spell, that makes it okay.
It's angry. Yeah, anyway.
Yeah. Gaston is the good guy in Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah, Gaston's trying to save her. Anyway.
Clearly written from the Beast's perspective. Yeah. History is written by the winners.
That's right.
And the winner was that beast. Cool. So we should probably go to our interviews now. Just a bit of law and order to this podcast. So we'll go to our interviews with Unhi Bark and Simon right now. But before we do, actually, we should probably talk membership. So Nina, people might be enjoying the podcast. People might be thinking that, Gaston was the good guy in that story. What can they do if they want to join the IPA?
Just visit ipa.org.au and click on the join button. And starting as low as $22, you can become a member of the IPA for a year. And you will receive, for your membership, during your membership, you will receive an award-winning magazine and Australia's oldest political magazine, IPA Review, for free.
For free. Well, for the $22.
For $22.
Yes, exactly. And if you guys
starting at 22.
If you guys like the podcast, we are available on iTunes, SoundCloud, and our website. And you can also start to listen to it through our email, Hey What Did I Miss, which goes out on Thursday afternoons, as Nina alluded to. So make sure you guys are subscribed on any of those platforms that you prefer. Make sure you guys are telling your friends and family about the show. Get the word out there. We've been having a lot of 5-star reviews come through on iTunes. Thank you so much for those. Really helps us out with the rankings each week. So keep them coming through.
Cool.
All right, let's go to those interviews. Okay, we are now joined by Unhi. Is that how I pronounce it?
And yeah, it's great.
Brilliant. Okay, now I've been looking forward to this interview for a very long time. This is going to be really interesting stuff. So
this is very cool.
You are a defector from North Korea,
yep.
Which is really amazing. So what we want to get a sense of is what was life like when you were in North Korea? So you escaped in 2012. What yep. was life like living in such a regime?
When I was in North Korea, I was a student who studied chemistry in college. And when I was 17, I decided, oh, I will go to another country because there is no human rights. And every day I walked out of the house, the police catched me because the clothes I wore. There is a lot of do's and don'ts.
Right.
So we cannot wear pretty clothes, and then we cannot change my hair color, and then we don't have a speech of freedom in there. So after watching South Korean dramas and then American movies, I decided, people in other countries were so free.
Yeah.
And why is my life is like this in its country? And then, I will leave my country. So I dropped my college after 1 year. And after that, I had a business with my mom's sister, a kind of boss, by boss, because there is not many great transportation in North Korea. We don't have a freedom to travel in other places in North Korea too. So a lot of business people want to go to other places to sell stuff, because they want to get profit from the things. So we have the customers, and then, I don't know, it's a totally different system, so it is difficult to explain.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. I mean, I read in your story that you were taken by the police for dyeing your hair just slightly more brown, which is just so out of control to even imagine living in a place like that. So what was it like having like a policeman say, sorry, I've had a look at your hair, that's not up to scratch?
We cannot change my hair color, and also we cannot take a short skirts. As always, we have to under the knee. We don't want it. It's the government to control everything.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I had a lot of punishment. As a punishment, I forced to stand in the police station for 6-7 hours.
Wow.
Without no food or water.
Whoa.
Always, I cannot go to even bathroom. But it's so 4-7 hours is many times. And they're always my grandparents waiting me and then worried about me. So one day I thought about them, why my life is like this? I'm a human being and I'm a girl. I wanted to look pretty. It is a nature human rights. And then I asked my grandma, why can I live like this? I don't want to be in this country anymore. So she told me, there is no future, there is no hope in this country. If you wanted to live with a human being, you can go to the other country. I want to support you, but it is not easy to escape in there. Mm. So it took maybe four hours to prepare to escaping. And finally, after 4 years, I escaped my country.
We'll talk about your escape in just a second. I just want to ask one more question about life in North Korea. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a bit about the economic situation in North Korea? Was it very poor?
Yeah.
You know, was it difficult to have good conditions to live in, stuff like that?
Yeah, it's, of course, a lot of people is watching a TV show and then news about weapons and poverty in there. Of course, there are a lot of people is that don't have a food. And then a lot of young generation are dying because of hunger.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Starvation. Yeah,
yeah, starvation. And also workers in North Korea is work without payment, no pay. I never heard about salary in North Korea, but it's just a little bit. We cannot buy rice and food as a salary, but we don't have a salary, but it's $1 for 1 month.
Whoa.
Yeah, it is. We cannot live with the little money. It's just a few. So when I came to South Korea, I was so surprised. People, when people work, they can deserve. And then they can have money for a company and then, yeah, from society. And I shocked why North Korean people work without payment. But we don't have, we cannot have a protest about that because people are brainwashed since they were born in the country.
Yeah, I do want to ask about that. So what, when, like, going to school in North Korea, what are you told about the outside world? What are you told about South Korea? Are you told anything at all?
Yeah, actually, we have five histories in the country. So three of histories about Kim family. It's Kim Jong-un's grandfather and Kim Jong-un's father and then Kim Jong-il's wife. So three histories, and we must study very hard about the histories. But is if we don't pass the history, we cannot move to next level.
Right.
So it was the best subject when I was in North Korea in elementary school and middle school and high schools and also university too. And I learned about South Korea. That South Korean people cannot go to school because they don't have money. And then a lot of people are dying by starvation. But when I came to South Korea, it is paradise, you know. It's a lot of people have a lot of food and money, and then they have a freedom to choose what do you want. But it's, they taught me, they teach me, there is no human rights in South Korea, and then they don't have money, they don't have any hope in there.
Mm.
But is in our country, in North Korea, we can study whatever you want. It is for free.
Mm.
But it's a lot of people, it's almost people who don't have money cannot go to school because every day we have to pay. So people cannot study without money in there.
Right. So you told me about your escape the other day when we met before this interview, and that was an incredible story. You said before it took you 4 years to prepare for your escape.
Yeah.
Why don't you tell the story of your escape for our listeners? Because I think they'll be very interested.
You mean why?
How you got from North Korea to South Korea.
Yeah. Yep.
First, I crossed the border, North Korean border to China.
Mm-hmm.
So I crossed the river. The name is Amnok River.
Yep.
So between North and China.
Did you have to swim across that?
No, we cannot swim because the water is so strong. So if we swim, we can die. So just walk with maybe three people and with one year baby.
Mm-hmm.
And after is cross the river, the baby was starting to cry. Then I was so scared because the police was here. When the soldiers hear is the baby's crying, they will shoot us. So I played with the babies a lot of times for maybe 1 hour, exhausted. But I have to do it because I can die. I don't want to be die before I came to South Korea.
Yeah.
And also we had to cross the China for 7 days,
mm-hmm.
but it was a so difficult moment. Some guys who don't have a Chinese identity, they had to be with us in is a small space in the bus. And then they approached the North Korean girls, and then we faced the sexual assault in there, but we couldn't say anything because it was too dangerous. So we don't want to be back in North Korea again. If we want to be back in North Korea, maybe the government will kill us. So just stop talking, and then yeah, we couldn't say anything. And then so we crossed the Laos, because when we crossed the Laos, we had to crossing the mountain, hiking the mountains to cross into Laos. And it was the difficult moment in my life. And then also as the smugglers in Laos crossed the us to Mekong River to get to Thailand. And we heard this, there are a lot of crocodiles in there. It was just a scare, but we didn't have a choice. Just we had to face the situation to go to South Korea. And then in Thailand, we were in jail with the real criminals. And then sometimes they are as a spilled water to us, but also we don't have a choice to say anything in there. So. Yeah, so after 50 days and a total 50 days, and after that, we went to South Korea. And we are held in Center for North Korean Refugees to learning about South Korean culture, because in North Korea, we don't have a computer, so we don't know how to make a document. And then what is the office, you know, is a window, so what is Windows, we don't know. So we had to learn about South Korean culture, and then also is how to work in your company in South Korea. And after 3 months or so, we had to learn about South Korean language, because we are using more language, but there are a lot of Konglish. Konglish means the Korean language adopting English.
Right.
Yeah. So a lot of Konglish words, but North Korean people don't know. Or so for example, it's egg tart, which means it's egg tart, you know? So what is egg tart? What is Wi-Fi? What is Wi-Fi? Even Wi-Fi means it's like a pie name. So some North Korean... our North Korean friends, it's turned first time they came to South Korea. What is Wi-Fi? It's a brand name.
Yeah.
Because it's pie.
Yeah.
So, and then, yeah, there is no internet in there. So we had to learn new things about South Korea.
Right.
Yeah.
So what were your sort of first impressions like on your first few days in South Korea of living in this place? Like, what were the thoughts going through your mind walking around South Korea?
Yeah, a lot of people is asked me, so what's your impression about South Korea? Because there is South Korea and North Korea are totally different countries. But before, even if you were one country before, whereas, for me, I didn't have a first impression about South Korea because I had to settle down in the country. There is no one to support me. And then also I had to pay back $7,000 to smuggler who helped me to escape. So I only think about how can I pay back my is a 7,000 to smuggler, because the smugglers helped us. So I had to pay back to them. It is true. And then, yeah, so I didn't have any impression first time when I came to South Korea. Just find my job at a bakery and work hard, and then sleep for 3 hours for 1 year. And then, you know, work at company. Now I can, it is a difference from North Korea. I can say that now I can compare the life in South Korea.
Right.
But first time I didn't have, any ideas about the country.
Yeah.
So you're in Australia on a student visa, is that right?
No, I have actually, it's a working holiday visa.
Working holiday visa,
yeah.
Right. And so you mentioned, you know, that South Korea is very different from North Korea. What, apart from the economic side of things, what do you notice that's different about countries like Australia and South Korea compared to North Korea?
There is a salary.
Yep.
Even, yeah, the name the salary, but in North Korea, there is no salary. But people work hard for a long time. It's a start at 7 and a finish is a 7 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
So over 12 hours they work, but there is no salary. When I came to South Korea, if I work hard, I can deserve it. And then I can save money, I can travel all over the world, and then I can do everything what I want. And also, people have a freedom of speech.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now I can call Kim Jong-un as a pig. Kim Jong-un is a pig. One of my Australian friends asked me, what is your national animal in North Korea? I know here is a kangaroo, you know. I think it is a big pig, huge pig, because it's Kim Jong-un is a pig.
Yeah,
yeah. So people also is a freedom of speech in this country. But also, we don't study economic as a subject in North Korea. But in here and in South Korea, people are studying about economic and business, because we don't need to study economic business in North Korea, because the government, the dictatorship, do everything. And also, its nature is so beautiful, because in North Korean people is don't have money, and then they have to cook by trees. So there is not many trees on the mountains. Mm-hmm. But in here, it's beautiful, amazing. And yeah, also it's different things. Is I can change my hair color, and I can have long hair. And then whatever is happens is, you know, in the summer, I can be free to wear, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
One final thing I want to ask you. So obviously the Winter Olympics are happening right now, yeah. South Korea. It's this mm-hmm. huge thing. And North Korea, obviously, they were marching with South Korea at the opening ceremony. We saw those really creepy cheerleaders doing the clapping stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And Kim Jong-un's sister is on this sort of charm offensive thing.
Yeah.
It seems to be a lot of Western media is kind of falling for it, just sort of praising how organized the cheerleaders are.
Yeah.
And sort of saying it's not so bad that they're there in the first place. What do you make of that, watching like CNN, for instance, just fall in love with these cheerleaders and what North Korea is doing at the Olympics?
Yes. When I was in Indonesia, a lot of people is asked the question, same question, is what do you think about the situation? Is North and South are together for Olympic, Pyeongchang Olympic? It was great picture to public. But as you know, before, since long time ago, is Kim Jong-un, Kim Jong-il didn't promise anything. Just they said, oh, we will stop to make weapons and missiles, but they did again continue to do everything. Now it looks like a great, amazing performance to is people abroad. But it's, I think it is possible for short term be together, North and South, but it's long term, we cannot share about that.
Mm.
Yeah, we know it's the dictatorship.
All right, brilliant. We've got one more.
Sorry, I just wanted to ask. So, what are your hopes and dreams for the future? What's your ambition?
My future is unification. It's not only South and North. So, I want to help to make a unification for North Koreans and South Koreans. But it's actually young generation in South Korean people don't have any hope about unification. And then the unification is are withering away in South Korea, because older people have families in North Korea, so they want to make a unification, but the young generation don't care about that. So I want to close with the South Koreans, because as a North Korean defector, it's not only unification and then we were one country before, not only this reason. We have to share our freedom, our future, then our hope with everyone. That's why I want to close with the South Koreans, and then I want to make all my organization with the North Korean people and give a speech and then share our stories to North South Koreans, also to everyone in other countries.
Okay, yeah. Absolutely. Thank you so much for joining us on the show.
Yeah.
Okay, we're now joined by Simon Breeny, IPA Policy Director and Q&A star. Mm. Simon, welcome back to the show.
G'day, guys. Thanks very much and great to be back.
Yeah, awesome.
Did you know you were recognised by a few of my cricket mates at training last night? They were like, was your boss that was at the trivia night on Saturday night on Q&A on Monday night? I'm like, yeah, that's him, mate. Anyway, carry on, James.
There we go.
There you go. That is literally the first time that's ever happened. So that's nice, I guess.
I think that's cut through.
Yeah,
that's cut through into untapped markets. So well done, Breeny. Obviously we played at the start the audio of your very own Q&A clap. Now, obviously, Pete and I have always had jokes about how Q&A claps are never given to sensible policy positions or stuff that the IPA thinks.
So you ruined the gang.
I do want to get into the mindset of someone that has received a Q&A clap. Like, what is it like to be applauded?
To be honest, for me, it was really off-putting because I'm in the same camp as you, as thinking this kind of thing just doesn't happen to sensible commentary. It usually happens for the most vapid comments that you could make on the left of the political spectrum. So when I got one for my comment on nuclear energy on Monday night, I could not believe it. I could not believe it.
So just expand on the point that you were making, if you could, on nuclear energy. So obviously the renewables conversation is pretty hot in Australia right now, but obviously nuclear energy is clearly the way to go.
Yeah, look, I just think if you're someone who legitimately wants to reduce emissions, then nuclear energy has got to be the way to go, because at the moment none of the renewables that are on the table give you the kind of reliability that nuclear would. So nuclear can provide baseload power, it has no emissions, and it's the kind of thing that these days is much, much safer than it was 20 or 30 or 50 years ago. And most of the objections that people raise to nuclear are based on what old style reactors looked like and operated like, you know, 30 or 40 years ago. So I just think it's a conversation that really needs to be updated from those old talking points that a lot of people, particularly on the left, have used for a very long time now, because most of the conversation is based on outdated information. And the reason, too, that I raised this in the context of the renewables debate is that Adam Crichton and Joe Kelly in The Australian had a terrific article in September last year in The Australian where they talked about how much we were spending on renewables in terms of subsidies. And they calculated that $60 billion a year was going to be spent on renewables by the year 2030. And they made a comparison between that and building large-scale nuclear power reactors. And they estimated that you could build 10 large nuclear power reactors for the same price. So that's why I raised that in the context of the energy discussion on Monday night.
I do want to bring up one thing with you, Simon. So you say it's outdated talking points from the left on nuclear technology, but Fukushima was not too long ago. So how can you, Simon Breeny, guarantee that the middle of Australia where we'd build the nuclear power plants isn't going to be hit by both a giant earthquake and a tsunami?
Yeah. So, I mean, that's obviously one of the more recent disasters that people bring up. But you're going to have disasters if you've got a tsunami, and it's going to come in the form of some pretty serious destruction. So it's a strange one to bring up because it wasn't a nuclear reactor issue. It was an issue with the sea being at a slightly higher level than average.
Yeah, exactly. And also no one died, if I recall, from nuclear fallout in Fukushima.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So that there are no cases of anyone dying from radiation poisoning following Fukushima. So it's actually one of those things that is a myth that continues to be perpetuated, but the science and the data just doesn't back it up.
Absolutely. So we do have one thing we want to discuss with you, Breeny. So I think you've seen this as well, but we have a tweet here from DJ Roo Rocks, or Drew Francis, as they probably are more commonly known as. It is hard to fathom how someone as smoking hot as Simon Breeny can be the living embodiment of pure evil, hashtag X-File. Let's unpack this a lot.
Well, I actually only read the first two lines of any tweet that mentions me. So this is the first time I've heard that second part. The first part was the only bit that I was interested in.
Smoking hot.
So I thought it was a complimentary tweet. Yeah.
It doesn't get much better than that.
Yeah, I want you to rank it in the pantheon of Simon Breeny Q&A commentary, where it was right-wing Harry Potter. Yeah. Whose son were you?
Greg Combe's son.
Greg Combe's
right.
son, or yeah, the right. smoking hot embodiment of pure evil. So, which one? Yeah, which one's going on the Tinder profile?
Well, this is right up there, and this one's going. I mean, for me, this is pretty significant because I've obviously stepped up from Bernard Keane's latest assessment, which was that I was just passably handsome.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
damn with fame praise.
Yeah, hit the gym.
That's great. Yeah. Yeah. Well, no, actually, no. If anything, I've gone the other way. So maybe that's what's working.
Dad bod.
There's another one which I found. I did research by going on your Facebook page, and there was another one from an individual called Roman Antonio. I don't know who has worse hair, Donald Trump or that IPA hack Simon on Q&A.
That's hurtful. That's really hurtful.
4th December 2017. But I like the way that he just referred to you as Simon, like Ronaldo or Pelé, like your just first name.
Messi.
That's another example of cutthroat.
But this is an ongoing theme, and I feel like that you're being objectified for your physical appearance rather than what you have to say.
You know, imagine if someone of the opposite sex had these things said about them on Q&A.
They probably do.
I don't really want to look at those tweets. It's going to make me sad. So I have one final question, and I'm going to open this up to the panel. So Pete and Nina, if you want to chime in. Would you rather be smoking hot and the living embodiment of pure evil, or really unattractive but the living embodiment of pure good?
Aye.
Yep, smoking hot, personification of evil. Brini, would you rather be the person you are now?
Brini,
for sure. I'm pretty comfortable in my own skin.
I'll go with A's.
Okay, fine. 4 A's. Sweet. All right, Brini, we'll let you get back to it. Obviously, you're over the phone, so you're hard at work in Sydney today. So, awesome. We'll catch you next week.
Thanks, guys. Thanks very much.
Okay, thank you to Unhi and Simon for those interviews. Really interesting stuff. Really learned a lot. And we'll see if Simon continues to be the smoking hot embodiment of pure evil. So let's go through some stories that have made us laugh this week. So I want to start with this one, if I may, Pete. This one came out of CBS in New York. Obviously there's, you know, having a best friend, porn part of growing up, but for not much longer. Yeah. Certainly a big part of me growing up.
I wouldn't be the bitter and twisted man I was today if I...
had some sort of emotional connection to someone.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool. So, well, it might be good news for you or for future Peter Gregorys out there. So, rumour tour first started in Prince George's South London School. Is this push to break up best friends, says clinical psychologist Dr. Barbara Greenberg. So, basically, this is schools trying to make sure that people don't feel left out, people don't feel excluded when they go to school. They're going to try and break up people having best friends and instead encourage people to have lots of small friends. So, like, I think it's a line from If by Rudyard Kipling, but like, let all men count with you, but none too much. But taking it to its like really creepy things of just like, stop hanging out with that person.
Yeah.
That's like three times this week.
It's like little kids go, you're my best friend, and you're not my best friend anymore. And
yeah. Cool. So I also like this. So Dr. Barbara Greenberg describes it as a very intriguing social experiment,
which is
such a great sell to the parents of the kids. really think this is going to be a hell of a social experiment. We can't wait to see what happens.
My kid up for an intriguing social experiment.
Yeah, exactly. So they say it's raising some eyebrows, obviously, and Dr. Greenberg works with children and adolescents, there's some good rationale behind it. I see kids come in all week long who are feeling dreadful because they are excluded and because they either feel they're nobody's best friend or their best friend has moved on.
Mm.
So it's important to coddle them and not learn resilience at that young age so that when, you know, someone breaks up with you in your 20s or like your friendships fall apart, you'll have absolutely no way of dealing with that.
Yeah, I think that children's interpersonal skills should be completely regulated.
Yep.
And that we shouldn't let them learn about life at all. I liked it when she said, you can't really, let's face it, you can't ban somebody from having a close relationship and you can't really ban somebody for having a best friend. So, like, she's so, like, disappointed that unfortunately we can't stop these little humans from forming bonds with each other.
We are going to try everything we can. But, you know, she is a clinical psychologist, so we probably do need to respect her. So, from now on, Pete, Nina, I'm banning both of you from telling me anything about your personal lives, just in case we do develop a friendship. So
I never told you anything.
No chance of that.
Yep. All right, good. Excellent. Pete, what have you got for us?
James.
As long as it's not personal.
No, it's not personal. James, Nina, God bless Bob Catter. All right, me and Bob don't agree on much at all. You know, he's an agrarian socialist pretty much, and I don't really go in for that. But Bob does Bob, okay?
You're more of a general socialist than specifically agrarian. Well,
no. What are we talking about here? So we're talking about... So Bob, just before the story, Bob went on TV last week with a knife talking about the Barnaby Joyce thing.
I need more context there.
Okay.
I've been in Adelaide. Why was he on TV with a knife talking about Barnaby Joyce?
This story I found, Queensland MP, an extremely rogue dude, which I think is a good explanation. Bob Catter appeared...
I think that's his next election.
...on Sky News this morning, wielding a knife to announce a crossbencher in federal parliament is planning blah, 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 blah. It just goes on about the actual politics then.
Oh, okay. So,
anyway, so back onto this actual story.
Right. I will later look up why he had a knife.
It's because... it doesn't really explain it in his face, to be honest.
I don't think
he really actually had a knife?
Yeah, on TV, Sky News. According to this, which I didn't say it, but I assume it's true. Anyway, a man has been fined $10,000 for killing a 5.2-metre crocodile in central Queensland. pleaded guilty, fined $10,000, no conviction, recorded against him. The reason he killed the crocodile was because he said he was trying to protect the cattle on his property. So he's a farmer in Queensland. Now, Bob Catter went on like Cairns Channel 7 News. So we're going to play the audio for you.
Let me take a hypothetical. If you have got a huge crocodile that eats animals and people to stay alive, thanks, and he's in your backyard, then your backyard is yours, not the government's. And you are entitled to protect your backyard. That is the basic freedoms upon which Magna Carta was written, and all of our freedoms, liberties, and rights are based.
So, Bob, this is oppression from South Queensland. This is our basic freedoms. Bob, you do, Bob. Yeah. How good's that? It is Magna Carta.
Yeah, so I obviously, like, this podcast has a great affinity, like, for Bob Catter's stance on crocodiles. In the same way we get iPhone notifications when there's, like, a disaster on the way or when, like, a major news story breaks, I need an iPhone notification to pop up whenever Bob Catter has said the word crocodile at a press conference.
Well,
I just want to be, like, I want to know it's happening. I want to figure out where my nearest TV is. I want to figure out how I can watch it.
Because
it's electric viewing every time it happens.
I love it.
So, yeah. Obviously, you guys would remember when he described that he wasn't going to spend any time on gay marriage until they solved the problem of people being torn apart by crocodiles in far north Queensland. And look,
Bob.
Magna Carta, obviously one of the great founding documents of crocodile law in Queensland.
Yep.
And I've just got some bad news for people hoping to marry in North Queensland in a same-sex relationship. The Magna Carta is over 800 years old, and crocodiles are still a problem in North Queensland. So we're going to be waiting a long time for Bob Catter to be spending any time on gay marriage.
I would not hold your breath at all.
Cool. So I got another story here. So I am so sick of reading stories about Russian meddling in the US elections. I don't know what's true. I don't know what's false. Everything seems to be... I've read the headline, "This once and for all proves that Trump is colluded with Russia." I've read that headline 217 different times, and not one of them has actually proved anything. So, but this one did stick out to me as hilarious. So Michael Moore, obviously very vocal on the idea that Trump's colluded with Russia, but so did he, apparently. This headline coming from Fox News: Michael Moore participated in anti-Trump rally allegedly organized by Russians. Hook it to my veins. I am so glad this happened. So Michael Moore, like, some of the actual details of what Russia was doing in the elections included, after the election, they organized some rallies to just, quote, sow discord in the US political system.
Is that right?
Yeah. Well, you just make a Facebook event like, oh, we're going to rally outside Trump Tower.
Yeah.
And they put that out there, and who should show up but Michael Moore, and, you know, complaining that Trump didn't come down and talk to him. Can't imagine why Trump would refuse the opportunity to talk to such a esteemed filmmaker.
He's very noughties, Michael Moore.
Yeah.
He was massive when I was at uni.
Oh, I'm sure. He's still massive when I was at uni. Like, okay. People really seem to... The thing is, his documentaries are actually kind of entertaining.
They are.
And then you're like, hang on, maybe interviewing a demented-rattled Charlton Heston is probably not the best argument against the Second Amendment.
Yeah.
So Bowling for Combines starts to take this thing out. But yeah, so Michael Moore, always welcome to embarrass himself in front of the eyes of the media. So please keep on doing that as well.
Does he even care? Like, would he be like, even care that he's a Russian shill?
I think...
Russian shill now, I guess.
Yeah, well... what's his name? Oliver Stone seemed to really gravitate towards Putin, so maybe this is like a pathway. You make a bunch of left-wing movies and then you start to follow Putin.
He might just say so.
Yeah.
He might not. Anyway, might not. Who knows?
We should get him on the show.
We should.
Yeah.
Why not?
All right, should we move on?
Yes, we should.
We're going to do another Speaking Truth to Power. This is a segment that we're trying to get off the ground. Well, it's off the ground now.
It's in the stratosphere.
Stratosphere. Anyway, New York Times regularly...
Trying to support you, man. Sorry, that's me being a friend. I should not have done that.
Yeah, exactly. So, New York Times regularly makes Speak Truth to Power, which says something, and goes to your comment about the New York Times.
New York Times has lost it.
Which is a New York Times.
It's my rival segment.
It's like a simultaneous segment, dovetails. Donald Trump makes golf look bad by Joe Zimmerman on February 17. Donald Trump makes golf look bad.
I've read this article 5 times. It's funnier every time.
Golf was so close. It was so close to moving beyond that stereotype. The image of a white, old, unathletic white man, I said white twice, making sexist jokes and trading real estate tips. The image of someone like Donald Trump. All right. Good on you, mate.
Thank you, Dave Hughes.
Thanks. Sorry that white men play golf. Here we go. No, sorry, I'm just getting to the best bit. So there's lots of blah, 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 blah. And now the president, who generally likes to spend his long weekends near a golf course, is hogging golf's headlines. It's making me think twice about admitting out loud that, yes, I'm a golfer.
He's the real victim.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry for that guy.
What's his name? Joe Zimmerman. Stay woke, Joe Zimmerman. Jeez. Because Trump's taking golf off you.
Yeah, so this whole op-ed, you guys got to read it online, just talking about how he's ashamed to play golf and like how the rules of golf don't apply to Donald Trump, and makes these weird jokes about how what kind of golfer Trump would be. I have one note on this story. Okay. So obviously, as Pete read out in the headline, it was so close to moving beyond that stereotype, the image of a rich, old, unathletic white man making sexist jokes and trading real estate tips. I got some bad news for you, Joseph.
Yeah.
I want everyone to close their eyes and picture a golfer.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think that's his thing.
He's like, oh, golf
was so close to being cool.
No, it wasn't, mate.
And he goes, listen to this. The dominance of Tiger Woods started to make it seem cool. I don't know if you've been reading about Tiger Woods recently, mate.
No,
he had 45,000 affairs.
The best part was he said, before Tiger Woods disappeared, as if it was just like, just one of those mysteries of life. Yeah. Why did Tiger Woods go away?
Donald Trump makes golf look bad. Anyway.
Yeah, I think Joe Zimmerman makes golf look bad. I'll tell you what, I would be much more terrified of seeing Joe Zimmerman playing golf next to me than I would have Donald Trump. I'd be like, this guy's going to start talking to me, and I'm terrified.
He lets it slip a bit later on that he's like, I used to play golf in college. It's like, oh, okay, so you don't actually play golf anymore.
It's not like it would have been a professional golfer in college, like amateur circuit.
Yeah. Anyway, well done on speaking truth about Joe Zimmerman.
Yes. And
the New York Times.
The New York Times has lost it. I can't believe they published that. Why has an editor sit there and go, send?
This is good. This is good. Edgy. Yeah, bit of colour.
Yeah. Oh, we're finally hitting the white golfers market.
Yeah.
Oh, man. All right. Last story we got here. So ABC Online hit the major new story of the day.
Yeah.
Major new story of the week. Nothing we've been talking... This whole podcast has been leading up to this groundbreaking story.
The national broadcaster speaking for its people.
The taxpayer-funded broadcaster. So the case for the pregnant male emoji.
Yeah. It's been the talk.
It's been too long.
Every office caller
Nina's
in the
liking
world.
It.
Yeah,
Nina doing the teamwork thing of intentionally laughing away from the microphone, so no one thinks she's interested.
Yeah.
Now she's laughing harder. Cool. So
this is divided Australian society.
Yeah. So obviously, like, if you do use emojis, there's obviously the pregnant female, and that's just an emoji you can use if you feel like colours what you're saying in a text message. And she's saying, "Well, why?"
Picture says a thousand words.
Good point.
Yeah.
So what does an emoji say though? It's not exactly a picture. 10 words. So she's saying, the author is saying, there's also the case for the male emoji. We don't want to be gender discriminatory, just saying that women can get pregnant. Again, probably not the biggest issue going around, but as long as we're opening up this Pandora's box of takes on a pregnant male emoji, I'm going to say I'm against emojis in general.
Yeah, Bolt hates emojis.
Terrible. I just use words, like the English language or whatever language you speak has just developed to a point where you don't need to use emojis. Like, this is a line I'm stealing from Conan O'Brien, but it's like, I waited for you for an hour at the restaurant, where were you, sad face? Probably don't need the sad face. I think the rest of that communicates what you were going for there.
I reckon that's the stupidest thing you've ever said.
Really?
Yeah.
I've said a lot of stupid
things.
And it's
a strong feel. Nah, just that was a joke. Okay.
I'm a big gift guy. So then why, do you love a gift?
So, okay, well, there you go.
Yeah.
Why have gifts or memes? Or why have music or art or any nonverbal way of communicating, James?
Oh, good point. Maybe I'm against music.
Great point. What do you think? Nina?
Well, I still stand with the emojis. Yeah. I like hugging people in virtual worlds. So emojis.
Hugging people in virtual worlds.
Yeah. Like, I want to show that.
Poetic.
Well... How do you hug people then?
Yeah,
okay. I usually put my arms around them.
No, but
if you're in chatting and then you want to hug people, then emoji is the only way to do it. So I'm still standing with
two against one.
That is the best argument for an emoji I've ever heard. Oh,
thank you very much.
Second best was a case for a pregnant female emoji, pregnant male emoji. My other take on this one. So pregnant male emoji, I don't think it's going to be the victory for equality that the author thinks it is. The pregnant male emoji, I'm looking into my crystal ball here, that will only ever be used by men who over ate and they're trying to communicate how much food they ate.
Yep.
Because you'll have a pregnant man and he'll be fat.
I'm pregnant, yep.
Yeah. And it will also be used by men who cancel on plans to hang out with their pregnant partner because it's like, oh, if you're pregnant, I'm pregnant
yeah.
too.
Yep. So
I don't think it's going to be communicating the fact that someone is both male and pregnant.
Surprise, guys.
Yeah, but that is the end of our show this week. Thank you guys so much for listening. Thank you to Unhi and Simon for those interviews.
Fantastic.
So, Nina, let us run through, if people have enjoyed the podcast, how can they become a member?
Yeah, if you'd like to join as a member, just visit our website, which is ipa.org.au, and click on the join button. And starting as low as $22 for a year, you'll become a member, and you'll be receiving our best winning a magazine's IPA review for free, and also weekly emails from Peter, James, and Morgan.
And John, cool.
And if you've enjoyed,
controversial.
If you've enjoyed this podcast, thank you guys so much for listening. We're available on iTunes, SoundCloud, our website, and Hey, What Did I Miss? Make sure you guys are subscribed through those platforms if that's the way you like to listen to podcasts. If you are subscribing to us on iTunes, please make sure that you leave a 5-star review. Helps us out with the rankings. And you can also put in a comment, leave us some notes, leave us some show tips, etc. See you guys next week.
See ya.